There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Very good afternoon to you and welcome to the second hour of Dubai Today. This is Eye on Health. I'm Siobhan Layden sitting in for Sally Moussa today. And joining me now in the studio is Dr. Gordon Bland. He's a family doctor at Mediclinic in Dubai Mall. Dr. Gordon Bland, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you. Nice and healthy.
Indeed, indeed.
We were actually just having a, well, obviously it's not funny, I shouldn't say that, we were laughing. But so how do doctors stay healthy, you know, with all these sick patients coming through the doors? You must have the kind of vitamin C sort of on drip.
I wish it was there were secret medicines that we were taking and we could share the secret with the world.
Yeah, but what is your secret?
I think part of it, I think, is a little bit of exposure helps to keep the immune system primed. I think there's an element to that.
Right.
But I get sick like everyone else does from my family. When my girls bring illness home, that's when I pick it up.
Blame
generally.
It on the germ, bundles of germs
exactly.
called children.
Exactly.
Who like doing the rounds with all their germs. That's what I blame.
And they love to share.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
On the programme. I'm going to give the numbers out straight away for you listening. If you have any questions, it's an open clinic today. We're going to probably start off talking about the flu season because there are a lot of germs floating around, but please do feel free to text in on 4001, or you can also call in on 43 1010, or use the free messenger app. We welcome your questions. So let's start with flu. It is flu season.
It is.
There's a lot of talk about the flu jab. Should you take it? Should you not? Is it too late now anyway? Because they say you should take it around October time.
Good question,
I think.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on this flu jab? Are you getting a lot of patients through your doors asking for it?
We sure are, yeah. And particularly, I think, because the Southern Hemisphere have had a really rough run with flu this year. So their flu season is the winter season. So the Southern Hemisphere have been through their flu season already. And particularly in Australia, and that's where I'm from, so that's where I know a little bit more about. But they've had a rather serious strain of the flu go through there, and there have even been deaths of young people and people who are otherwise healthy from flu. And that's not a very common scenario, but this year it just happened to be a particularly nasty strain. So, yes, it is flu season now. It is certainly a good idea, I think, to have the flu vaccine, particularly if you have any other illness, particularly if you have, say, asthma or, say, heart disease or diabetes or other sort of issues, or if you have other issues with your immune system, if you're taking medication that interferes with your immunity, then it would certainly be a good idea to have the flu vaccine.
And as I said, it's not too late.
Not at all.
You can just do it now.
No, indeed. Mm. I mean, we have started flu season already and there are cases around of flu, but certainly not. It's not too late.
Is this Tamiflu? Is this what we're calling the flu vaccine, or is that something very different?
Tamiflu is a bit different.
Yeah.
There's the flu vaccine, and that we have in advance to help us defend ourselves against the flu virus. So that's a vaccine. Tamiflu isn't a vaccine. The easiest way to think of Tamiflu is it's an antibiotic that works against a particular virus, and it works against the influenza virus specifically.
Mm.
So it's one of the only medicines that we have that can actually interfere with how the influenza virus works, and can actually stop or knock out an infection once it's present.
Right, so you still probably get sick, but not perhaps not
exactly
as sick.
Yeah, in the same way that if you have, say, a bacterial infection and you take antibiotics, it knocks out the infection or helps your body to knock out the infection a bit more quickly, yes. The other perhaps reason we might use Tamiflu is if you've had confirmed contact. If we, say, have a family member who, let's say a child who tests positive for influenza, and we know that other family members have had very close contact with that person, as soon as they might start to show symptoms or as a preventative measure, we might put them on Tamiflu to prevent them getting the illness in the first place.
And tell me as well how it works. What's the sort of time frame we're talking about in terms of giving the Tamiflu, because it's
it's a tricky one. Tamiflu is a very good medication. It's effective, but there's a big but there. We have to get it in early. So the downside is once you've gone past about 3 or 4 days of symptoms, unfortunately the Tamiflu, it doesn't do much to help you out. It's most effective if you get it in within the first 24, 48 hours. After that, it may have a small effect, but it's much less of an effect.
Okay, right. So then you've just got to power through it, and struggle through
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's
really
tricky because it's sometimes picking influenza and identifying it. We do have good tests for it, but recognising the symptoms can be tricky in the early stages. We might not realise or think that this is influenza and I need to go and see someone about it.
Yeah, I was going to ask that actually. When is a cold not just a cold and something a bit more serious? How do you know?
Right. It's a really good question, and I guess there's no simple answer for it. So my stock answer would be, if you're concerned about your symptoms, if you feel that your symptoms are particularly severe, or if they've been particularly prolonged, or if they seem to be getting worse rather than getting better, then those would be good reasons to touch base with your doctor. I would perhaps rather see people come in and ask me for advice rather than worry about things at home. I don't mind if people come and see me with illness that's been there for a short period of time if they're worried about it. Mm. If I can reassure them and perhaps give them some advice early in the piece, that's a good thing. It probably beats sitting at home and struggling through something that might be potentially serious and not coming and getting the help you might need.
Yeah, it's a very fine balance, isn't it?
It's tricky.
Yeah. You know, being overcautious and calling up the doctor on the first sign of a sniffle,
exactly,
or leaving it too late and then it perhaps developing into something, bronchitis or pneumonia.
Indeed.
And then it's, you know, you've got something a lot more serious to deal with.
Indeed. The other thing I think that's happened with that is we've diluted what the phrase the flu actually means now too. Anytime we have a sniffle or a cough or a sneeze, we say, oh, I have the flu. And technically that's not influenza, which is the real flu. Influenza itself is a very severe version of what we would refer to as a common cold, and it's characterized by very high fevers, muscle aches and pains. It does have nasal congestion or cough as part of it. It may not, though, and it also seems to have stomach upset and perhaps diarrhea, loose stool as part of it. But the key features are the high fevers and the muscle aches and pains.
Yeah.
So that would characterize influenza as opposed to a head cold, which is more the sniffles and the runny nose and the sore throat.
Mm. And can you catch a flu?
Yes, definitely. Yeah,
just wanted to clear that one
definitely,
up.
Like, definitely,
you can catch a flu.
Although there are some wives' tales about that that are certainly not true.
Okay.
You don't get a head cold or the flu by standing out in the rain, or by not drying your hair and walking around with your wet hair on the back of your shoulders. Those things don't cause these illnesses. We know what causes these illnesses. It's a virus or a bacteria that causes these ones. Mm. So you get the illnesses by becoming exposed to those things.
Mm.
What probably happens, and the reason we get the whole story about the standing out in the cold, is that cold and flu season tends to be when it's cold. And so that often is a bit of a stress in our immune system if we're stuck outside in the cold. And that might be closely related in time to when we fall sick. So we seem to think that's what it might have been caused by.
Yeah.
But it isn't. We pick it up from the environment.
And how do we treat flu then? What's the best thing? I mean, give us some sort of home remedies and what you would
good stuff, yeah,
suggest as a doctor.
I guess taking the time to look after yourself is probably the most important thing. And in our busy lives, particularly here in Dubai, and we love our busy lives in Dubai, that temptation that, no, I must be at work every day because if I don't get to work, then the world stops. I think that's a limiting factor. I think we need to at times be able to say, look, my health, I will get better faster if I can just have some time to rest. That's not made a lot easier by some employers insisting that you need a sick note for any day that you're away. But I sometimes say to people, look, if you were at work today feeling this unwell, would you be in any way productive? And most people admit, yeah, look,
passing
I wouldn't be
your
very
germs
helpful.
On to
and that's right. No one will thank you if you go to work and get everyone else sick. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So what can you do? The first thing I'd say is try and look after yourself. So try and keep a good, healthy diet, keep your fluids up, get some good vitamin C. Zinc has been shown to be very effective, so some zinc supplement can be helpful. And if you feel that you're getting worse rather than better, or if you're really worried about your symptoms, talk to your doctor because there may be other things that might be beneficial or helpful.
Very good point there, I think, Doctor, as well. I suppose this idea of getting a quick fix, and people
exactly.
come to you like, fix me, I need a pill. I've got to get better. I was always under the impression or have this sort of theory that it takes a week to get sick. Yeah, well, you spend a week sick and then a week to fully recover, which really is about 3 weeks in total.
I think that
doesn't mean you
works.
Have to take 3 weeks off work. I'm not saying that. But you know, you can't get over a flu in 2-3 days.
Yeah, look, I'd love to have a magic wand and be able to wave it over someone and have them feel better the next day. I'd love to be able to do that. Unfortunately, the best we can probably do in some circumstances is, look, let's give you some medicine to support how you feel. Let's try and control the symptoms and give your body the best chance of fighting this effectively. And if you do need additional help like antibiotics, then maybe we put that in the mix as well. But generally speaking, it's more about supporting you and getting your body fighting as strongly as possible.
Yeah. There's a comment come through from No Name on this one saying, great advice, doctor. My sister had a cold, didn't see a doctor, and then developed pneumonia.
Mm.
She was very ill and now has the flu vaccine without fail. And she was in her 30s when it happened.
Yeah, and certainly that can be the case. If people who have serious lung infections, for example, say a pneumonia or a severe bronchitis, often have issues with their chest for a long period of time after that illness. So these are not sort of minor things.
Mm.
And I would certainly say if you're worried about how you're feeling, if you're just feeling things aren't improving, that should be a warning sign to go and get things checked.
Like after about a week or so. Something like that.
Yeah, although it can be really tricky. Some of these illnesses seem like the gift that keeps on giving, and you're sick for a couple of days and you feel you're getting better, and then you fall back again, and then you book an appointment but you feel better on the day you go and see the doctor. We recognise that happens, so we don't get sort of upset when people come in and say, well, I was sick yesterday, I'm feeling a bit better today.
Mm.
I often joke with people and say, look, the therapeutic thing was actually booking the appointment. That's what got you better. But no, we know these things can sometimes have a bit of a relapsing course. But if you're worried and if you just, certainly come and get things checked.
Mm. Is there a fear, perhaps we'll touch on this a bit more after the break, one's coming up right now, but this sort of over-medication of going to the doctors and then ending up sort of leaving the pharmacy with literally a bag full of pills.
Yeah.
And are you noticing that?
Certainly, yeah. And that can be different people have different approaches in that. Some people don't feel like they've had a quote-unquote proper doctor's consultation unless they walk out with 5 or 6 medicines. Other people will feel sort of almost jilted if they walk out with 2 or 3 medications. They'll think that was inappropriate. So it's trying to match people's expectations with what is realistically sort of suitable for their situation and what can and can't help. Certainly, taking 6 or 7 medicines doesn't necessarily make you feel any better than taking, say, 1 or 2 or even just getting rest without it. But it's about matching the medicines appropriately to your situation.
Yeah. Back to the show. And let me just say again, a very warm welcome to Dr. Gordon Bland, who is a family doctor at Mediclinic in Dubai Mall. Welcome once again.
Thank you very much.
We're talking about general health this afternoon, so please do join us. Any questions? We were mentioning off air, we might get into that a bit later, about vaccinations for children.
Sure, yeah.
We are also talking about flu, also talking about antibiotics, when to give and when not to give. Lots of questions. It's an open clinic. So, going back to kids, because, you know, it is one of those seasons. My kids have been off sick a few weeks ago, passed it around to me, then passed it to my husband, then it's coming back again, all full round circle. But it is one of those things, isn't it, where you think, oh, should I send them to school? Should I not? Are they well enough?
It's
are they
tricky,
not?
Yeah.
You know, what are the guidelines?
It's a good question. I guess the cheeky answer might be there. It depends on the illness itself as to what the guidelines might be. So for things like chickenpox, where we've got rashes and things like that, then the guidelines are pretty easy and pretty clear. If we've got rash, we don't send them.
Sorry, can I interrupt there? Do people still get chickenpox?
Oh, yes, definitely. There's lots of it around.
But even if they're vaccinated against it?
Good question. Yes, although the vaccination in the UAE is optional for chickenpox. It's not part of the mandatory schedule. And interestingly, lots of people how people approach chickenpox seems to vary from around the world. And interestingly, people from the UK generally take a more relaxed approach to it, having grown up with things like chickenpox parties and things like that. Whereas other countries are a bit more proactive in terms of the vaccination. So it's a mixed bag in terms of how many kids have actually been vaccinated for chickenpox. You can still get chickenpox if you've had the vaccine. It's much less likely, and if you do, it's a much more muted and mild version of the illness. But yes, we certainly see chickenpox, and certainly in Dubai, yes, definitely.
Okay. And we were talking about kids and
not send them to school. Another way to perhaps answer the question would be, it depends on the child themselves and depends on how old the kids are. older children, so teenagers and above, they're generally very good at sort of washing hands and keeping to themselves and not engaging in that sort of behaviour where they're sort of wiping their snotty nose and then touching other kids and, you know, what's that in your eye sort of poking behaviour that younger kids do. And younger kids are really good at transmitting illness because of all of those reasons. Their personal boundaries are less sort of strict when you're young. The hand washing is a little less well done, if at all. And so in those cases, for young kids, primary school age, it may be best to have them at home when they're sort of particularly unwell to help minimise spread.
Yeah. You know, sort of sticking on that topic there about cleanliness and washing your hands, what's your thoughts on sanitizers? I was just really shocked. I was in I got to get some petrol, I think, the other day, and I was in the petrol station, and on the counter were these very cute little sanitizers, obviously aimed
fashion accessory,
for
definitely,
kids,
yeah,
with little characters on them. And I know that both of mine, whenever we go to the supermarket, they're, oh, mommy, can I have one? I'm like, well, I don't think you really need one. And they were saying, well, some of their friends have them at school and they use them all the time. My personal opinion is that I'm not, I mean, okay, if you're in an instance, I have it in my bag where there's no water, mm-hmm. you need to wash your hands, fantastic. Mm. But what are your thoughts on this? Are we being too clean? Are we being too hygienic sometimes?
I think so, yes. Yes, we are being a bit too overly cautious in that sort of sense. Although, is there any particular harm in it? Probably not, though I certainly have seen people who've developed significant dermatitis because the alcohol hand sanitizers, they work by drying and stripping the oils. Well, sorry, one of the side effects of them is that they dry out the hands quite significantly. So if you use it a lot of the time, it's very easy for your hands to become quite irritated and inflamed and raw and sensitive. So if you're very obsessive about it, it can do you more harm than good.
Right.
I guess we really don't need to be that overly sterile. There are certain circumstances where that's a good thing, like say if you're about to eat. But if you're about to perform major surgery or things like that, but most of us don't do that in the course of a routine day. But just going about our daily lives, no, I don't think we need to be that fastidious about obsessive hand washing.
Yeah, and like antibacterial soaps and all these sorts of
things. Yeah, and there's even some evidence that our obsession with sort of cleanliness and sterility is actually causing certain illnesses to flare because we just don't have the same exposure to the bugs and our immune systems aren't as primed as they once were.
The previous doctor actually talked about this, the hygiene hypothesis.
Exactly,
which you've heard
of, yeah. That's right.
Which is, we live in these sort of safe houses, the safe environments where everything is very sterile and clean.
Yeah, and when we were kids, we used to run around in the mud and eat dirt. And kids nowadays don't do that.
Yeah. I suppose it's difficult again to sort of say, well, don't wash your hands so much. But, is it better just to sort of, again, have a healthy balance, in a sense, washing your hands before you're eating and obviously before you're doing anything major?
Indeed. Yeah, I think if you're sick, then I think it's a nice thing to be doing to try and help prevent you spreading it to other people. Or if you're around other people who are sick, then it makes a lot of sense.
Sure.
But if you're just out and about in the community and you're not sort of, before you eat, yep, go for that. But otherwise, I don't think there's any necessity there.
Mm. Good afternoon. Into the last half hour of the programme, I'm joined by Dr. Gordon Bland, who's a family doctor with Mediclinic in Dubai Mall. Welcome to you once again, Doctor.
Thank you very much
for joining us today. Yeah, we're tackling all sorts of things. We've been talking about the flu season, flu jabs. Is it a good thing? Is it not? Vaccinations. We're going to move on to supplements. Lots of things. It's open questions today. So for those listening, join us if you've got any queries and questions. The doctor would be happy to answer them. There's one come through actually, from Sarah, and she says, good afternoon. Chickenpox is the only vaccine my youngest son hasn't had. He's now 8 and not yet had it. My older two children had it when they were around 4 years old. Should he be vaccinated to avoid him getting it as he is older?
Oh, good question. I like the chickenpox vaccine. I'll be upfront with that one. I think it's a good vaccine. It's a very safe vaccine. It's generally very well tolerated. So I'd put that one up front. The second thing would be that we know chickenpox gets sort of more severe potentially the older you get.
Yeah.
There's not perhaps much of a difference between a child who is 4 and a child who is 8 in terms of how severe they might get chickenpox. But certainly adults who've never had chickenpox can have very miserable infection with chickenpox.
Is that like scarlet fever?
It's different to scarlet fever, but generally adults can get, essentially the skin lesions we see can occur in other places as well. So one of the problems we can get is they can occur within the lung, and we can get actually quite a severe viral pneumonia. We can even get infection of the brain from chickenpox, from the virus itself. And these are the much more serious and severe consequences that are not common with chickenpox, but those are the reasons that the vaccination program's really been pushed out, because chickenpox is more than just an unpleasant rash. It can have very severe and sinister consequences for some. For adults, they generally have a rougher time with it, a longer illness where they feel much worse. So there are a few things you can do in that situation. If you're an adult and you're not sure whether you've had chickenpox yourself, there are ways we can look at that. You can do a blood test to see, have you ever had it? And for some of us, particularly if we come from large families, we're having to rely on mum and dad's memory here, and sometimes we all get a bit mixed up, and maybe you didn't actually have chickenpox, or maybe you did and it just wasn't remembered. So there is a blood test where we can work that out. And if you show to be negative for any exposure to chickenpox, then yes, the vaccine can then be offered.
At any age?
Any age, definitely. Yeah, okay. And it's a good, safe vaccine. So yes, I would recommend it.
And as you mentioned, it's not a... It's not a general nationwide thing that is
happening.
No,
it's an optional part of the schedule.
Okay.
And it gets tricky because in other countries, in some countries it is part of the mandatory schedule. Again, where I'm from in Australia, we put it on as part of the routine schedule, whereas in other countries it isn't. So in the UK, it's not part of the schedule. So it's considered optional in the UAE.
Okay, right. So I suppose more chance of getting it then?
Potentially, yes.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's stick with those vaccinations again, because there was a couple of stories that I'd read about meningitis as well.
Yeah.
And the various different boosters and the ones that you have, and a new one, there's another one as well, which is not that new, but relatively new as well. Tell me a little bit more about those ones and if we should be thinking about having them or
not. Indeed. Now, there's a couple of mixes. I guess if we take a step back and look at meningococcal disease, there's two age groups where we see meningococcal disease primarily hit, and that's children aged 0 to 5. And then there's a second peak in young adults aged 15 to 25. So that 15 to 25-year-old group is now the group that we should be focusing a bit more on, because these are kids who might not have had the vaccine available when they were little kids, when they were babies, but are now heading off to, say, university accommodation where their chance of becoming exposed is higher. And so for them, there are recommendations to boost up with one of the newer vaccines that have been out for the last couple of years, so they're not new this week, but new in the last couple of years, so they're quite safe and well tested, and give very good protection against those as well.
And if you haven't had the one when you're younger, can you jump into the one when you're older?
Definitely.
Or do you have to go through the process?
No, it's the same vaccine, just the dosing strategy changes a little bit depending on your age.
Right.
If you're under 2, you might need 2 doses. If you're over 2 years of age, then just generally a single dose will give you good lifelong protection.
Interesting question just come through. Say, my name is Zirka. I had a meningitis vaccine about 10 days ago. But I have been achy, almost like when you do have a fever and lethargic in my arm that she had the vaccine in, and constant radiating pain to neck, shoulder, and very tired, like she's run a marathon. Is that, would you say that's probably about normal symptoms?
It sounds like a little more exaggerated than we've usually expected. That's certainly not a common response to the vaccine, but it does sound like a response to the vaccine, yes. Mm. The first thing I'd say there is that the meningitis vaccine isn't live. It's not a live vaccine. It's an inactivated, dead vaccine. And what I mean by that is it's impossible to actually develop meningitis from the vaccine.
Right.
That's sometimes what that sort of theory goes around, that I've had the flu vaccine and now I've got the flu.
Yeah.
Generally what's actually happening there in that particular situation is that person's immune system is reacting strongly and aggressively to what it's recognizing as being a foreign toxin essentially in the body. So it's mounting a strong immune response, and part of that immune response is that feeling of being unwell, the muscle aches and pains, the increased tenderness and pain at the injection site, and that those sort of flu-like symptoms are part of a strong immune response.
Yeah.
So if I can spin it to a good thing, it's actually a sign that that person has quite a strong immune response to the vaccine. So it's a good reaction.
So it'll probably last a couple of days.
It'll go away. It'll fade. It's unpleasant, but it's not anything sinister or nasty.
Mm. Again, going back to the national vaccine campaigns, is that on the list of that? Was it something that you do recommend?
Yeah, that is. Yeah. That's on the local schedule, definitely. It's on the local schedule for children aged. There are two ways to do it. You can give two doses under 2 years of age, or a single dose after 2 years of age. And if you're doing a catch-up, or if you're doing, say, for the 15 to the teenagers, then it's a single dose at that sort of strategy.
It's interesting, you know, with a lot of kids here going to school, possibly boarding schools or et cetera, or going to universities, out of the UAE. Is that something that you'd recommend that they look
Definitely.
Into before they go?
In fact, many colleges are insisting on a letter of proof of vaccination for meningococcal disease now.
Yeah.
I've certainly filled out that form for many universities, many colleges in the US and in the UK, where they're being very proactive about it. The risk is when you group a lot of those people together in shared accommodation, your risk of exposure rises. And so to try and minimise that as much as possible, they're wanting everyone to be vaccinated.
But you mentioned there is one, vaccination that isn't here. Is it the meningitis B?
There are a couple of different strains of meningococcal disease, and they're all as nasty as one another. It's a little bit like what colour was the car that hit you. And if you could vaccinate against white cars and black cars and blue cars, you'd take that vaccine and just perhaps accept the risk that you might get hit by a red car. So the vaccine that we have in the UAE that's available covers what we call strains A, C, Y and W. There's a different vaccine in the UK that's available now that covers strain B. Of all of the strains, strain C is the most common in the age bracket from 15 to 25. It covers that 75% of cases are type C, with all the other types making up the remaining 25%. And in the younger category, type B is about 50% of the cases, perhaps even less. So the type B vaccine would be an excellent thing to have. So
if you're going to the UK.
That's right. If you're travelling through the UK, or if you're a UK resident and heading there for holidays, I think it'd be an excellent thing to consider. We hope that we'll have that vaccine available to us soon in Dubai. I haven't heard any news about whether that's coming or not, but we'd love to have it to be able to use, yes.
So I suppose, again, some good holiday advice then from you if you are
going
away or you've got family coming
Indeed.
Here.
Yes, definitely.
Make sure you're up to date with all your vaccines.
Indeed.
Yeah. Good afternoon. Dr. Gordon Bland is in the studio with us. He's a family doctor at Mediclinic in Dubai Mall. Welcome to you, Doctor.
Thank you very much.
So we've sort of done the rounds of talking about the flu jab, which you're saying is a good idea. You'd
yes,
recommend
I like
to
flu
have
vaccine.
It.
Yes, indeed.
Vaccine.
Although, a quick note on that one. Many people will say, I had the flu vaccine last year, but I still got sick. And what I often respond to that is, you might have got sick, but you probably had a head cold, not the flu per se. So the flu vaccine will help prevent against the flu. It doesn't help prevent against head colds and the common cold, unfortunately.
But is it an annual thing that you have to do? You have to have it every year?
Good question. Yes, it is. And the reason for that is that the flu vaccine, we change it every year. What we do is there are groups set up by the World Health Organization that monitor the different strains that are circulating worldwide, and they try and predict what are going to be the three most significant strains that are coming out, and they put those strains into the flu vaccine. So this year, as part
how
of that...
How do they predict what are the three main flu strains?
It's watching patterns and watching what's emerging, and they keep their fingers on the pulse of the cases around the world.
Yeah, because I was reading this, it was on Google, wasn't there? They did a Google flu watch or something like that, which I think they've stopped now, and they had these patterns and everyone was inputting information, which I think was extremely valuable as when it happens, where it happens, where's the most cases, what kind of cases, etc. So using all those kind of algorithms.
That's
probably.
Right. It's a fascinating science in and of itself. And sometimes their predictions are better than other years. Sometimes they nail it bang on. Other years they have difficulty predicting and things come out of left field. But in the current vaccine, the swine flu is part of the three strains that are in the... People often ask, do I need a separate vaccine for swine flu? No, that's part of and has been part of the flu vaccine for the last number of years. So if you have that one, then you may still pick up an unusual strain that wasn't part of the predicted ones for influenza.
Yeah.
Or you might get the common cold or the head colds.
Yeah, sorry, still going to get sick.
That's right, you still can potentially get sick.
But what can you do? I mean, we're going to talk about preventing aches, pains, flu, runny noses, these sorts of things. I mean, there must be lots of supplements out there. Vitamin C, that's always the one, the go-to, isn't it?
It's the one we always talk about, yes. Yeah.
Is that a good one to take?
Look, the challenge with that is the evidence doesn't back it up. Unfortunately,
that's really annoying.
I know. We used to recommend this all the time, and we used to say vitamin C.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we've done more research now, and this was what happens with medicine. We make predictions, we make theories, and we try and test them as best we can. And unfortunately, the evidence just isn't backing up vitamin C as making much of a difference.
Mm.
Certainly not making any difference in terms of prevention, and certainly not making any particular difference in terms of how fast you might recover. So, if you put me in a corner and said, do I then think vitamin C is not a good thing? No, I still like vitamin C and I'd still recommend vitamin
yes.
C, but I think perhaps it's not quite as wonderful as we perhaps once thought.
It obviously depends on what you're taking as well.
Indeed.
And there are various different strains, there's a different quantities.
Yes.
And of course, what's in those is obviously,
exactly.
There's a lot of supplements and vitamins out there, but I think it's choosing the right brand.
Indeed.
With the right amount and mm-hmm. the right quantity.
Indeed.
And not full of
and
sugar.
And taking care of yourself, I think, is probably the more important first step. So making sure you eat well. And as we sort of said, in Dubai's fast-paced life, it's tricky to eat well sometimes. It's tricky to minimise stresses with work. It's tricky to get good sleep. It's tricky to get good exercise patterns. But those things are probably far more important than what particular supplement you put in after that. So if you can get the right supplement but still have all the stress at work and not look after yourself physically and not eat well and not sleep well, it's going to be less effective than trying to tackle everything.
Yeah. You mentioned zinc as well.
Yes.
Is that a good one?
Zinc seems to be. The effect is subtle. But yes, there is now scientific evidence to suggest that zinc does help. It perhaps doesn't help from a preventative point of view, but once you're sick, there's evidence to show that people do get better slightly faster if they're taking zinc supplements.
Mm. What sort of quantities? Or?
Yeah, good question. You can either take them as the lozenges, the zinc-infused lozenges, or you can take just oral supplements. Exactly what dose is required to get that effect is unknown at the moment. But
right.
Yeah, so a little bit. I wouldn't necessarily think going overboard on it would be essential either, but just a safe, sensible zinc supplement would be good.
Yeah, and things like echinacea, that's always another one that you see.
Echinacea is another one that's in that same category as vitamin C that we used to recommend routinely and we all thought was wonderful, but again, unfortunately, the evidence doesn't seem to be panning out as we'd like. So I don't think there's anything particularly harmful, again, in taking echinacea, unless perhaps you suffer allergies or things like that or reactions to it. But would I recommend taking it as a preventative? Probably not. I don't necessarily think that's the way to take it.
And what about you, Doctor? What have you got in your drawer next to your...
I've got the magic wand and the magic tablets that I don't get sick. I'm good. No, I must admit, I don't take supplements. I try and look after myself where possible, and that's one of these do as I say, not as I do scenarios, I guess. But yeah, trying to get good sleep where possible,
yeah.
I think is the most important. Good sleep, good regular exercise, eat well.
It just is that season, isn't it? There's lots of things going on. There's lots of parties.
Indeed.
You've got people coming through.
Easy to get that
you're
wrong.
Traveling.
Yes.
Coming back. So lots of perhaps late nights or not sleeping. It's all adds up, doesn't it? At the
it
end
certainly
of the day.
Does.
Yeah.
It certainly does. We mentioned the next wave was coming, just rather than leave your viewers in suspense on what that actually meant, that cryptic comment meant. I often joke that in Dubai we import the best illnesses from all over the world. And we certainly do. But we do see peaks of illness around the times just after school holidays, because that seems to be a peak travel time, particularly for families to travel outside of UAE, pick up the local illnesses from wherever they've gone and bring them back to us after holidays. So when school kicks back off again, yeah, that's a lovely sharing thing we have there. So what that next wave coming comment is referring to that, we often see after the Christmas winter break, New Year break, when school resumes, another kick-off in illness.
Yeah. So stay healthy.
Indeed.
Take the supplements if
indeed.
You feel
indeed. Look
sick.
After yourself.
Vitamin C, look after yourself. It's been an absolute pleasure. Dr. Gordon, and thank you very much.
Thanks very
look
much.
After yourself.
Indeed.
Thank you for joining us on the programme. He's with Mediclinic in Dubai Mall. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on the programme today. It's great to get your messages and questions. And stay well. Keep healthy.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.